Sherry, and to this wonderful event. Let me just tell you a little bit about this place. Holy Wisdom Monastery is a newly ecumenical monastery started by the Benedictine sisters, who are still Benedictine sisters, but we are included with Protestant sisters as well. And so we are an ecumenical Benedictine community. Now that's not widely known, so whenever I have the opportunity, I want to share that piece of good news. And we have an ecumenical board that meets twice a year. And so we were in meetings all day yesterday. Now, one of the purposes of the ecumenical board is to help us have a wider set of eyes, because as Roman Catholic sisters, we are about creating an ecumenical, interfaith kind of culture. So they help us because they represent other Christian traditions. And we are grateful for them. And when we have these board meetings, they help us invite keynote people to help us again and be a resource. And I would like Sister Laura Lai, who is a member of the board, to introduce our speaker today. Now we have to, Sister Lorelei is radiating more than usual today because it's the Feast of St. Francis and she is a Franciscan. So Sister Lorelei, you can introduce yourself and then introduce Captain.
Well, I'll first introduce myself by saying ditto to all my ecumenical board colleagues. But for me, when I come to the prairie, it's, yes, I am a Franciscan. That's pretty obvious. And today is the Feast of St. Francis. But I'm kind of a closet Benedictine. So that I can see all of you, and then I'll disappear when I introduce the speaker. First of all, it's a privilege for me to introduce to you Professor Catherine Cornilla. And I'll give you the short form, because if you'd like to go on the website, we'd be here all morning to read the website of who she is and her accomplishments. Professor Cornilla is an associate professor at Boston College in the theology department. Her degrees include many, and I'll only name two, which are related to what she's going to talk about today. She has from the University of Hawaii, are you jealous already, in Asian religions. She also has a PhD in religious studies from the Catholic University of Leuven in Belgium. Prior to joining the faculty of Boston College, Catherine taught for 10 years in the Department of Theology at the Catholic University of Leuven. For those of you who don't know so much Dutch, that's Louvain, the way we say it, or Louvain, okay? It's still in Belgium. She has been a visiting professor of Kansai University in Japan and at the University of Nijmegen in Netherlands and at King's College London. She has also taught courses at the College of Holy Cross in Worcester, Massachusetts, and at Western School of Theology. Her research interests. They focus on the theology of religions, the theory of interreligious dialogue, concrete questions of Hindu, Christian, and Buddhist-Christian dialogues, and the phenomenon of inculturation and intercultural theology. Her more purely historical or phenomenological research focuses on theories and methods in the comparative study of religions, women in world religions, and Asian new religious movements. She has taught many courses in many places, as you can imagine, among them Hinduism and Christianity, theory and methods in comparative religion, religious pluralism and Christian faith, and religion and globalization, as well as religions in each of the world religions, Hinduism, Buddhism, etc. I'll skip a long documentation of publications and just name two, which would, again, pertain to the topic today. Catherine is the author of A Double Belonging, Double Religious Belonging, Aspects and Questions in the journal called Buddhist Christian Studies, and I have details if anybody's going to go to a library and find it, if you'd like it. And also, she is the author of the book, the editor of the book, Many Mansions, Multiple Religious Belonging, and Christian Identity. And I will end by what I think is the most important important quality of Catherine Cornilla. I did my final studies at Leuven also, and when I was working on my STL, the License in Sacred Theology, there was the opportunity to have electives. So I did try to be ecumenically user-friendly. I did take a few other electives, but when I had my real choice, every single elective course just about every single course I took with Professor Quinilla, and did some doctoral coursework also with her to expand my own ecumenical concern, because I'm convinced and convicted that anybody who wants to be a good ecumenical theologian has to be very aware in heart and mind of the wider picture, which is the interfaith and interreligious picture. So please welcome me, Professor Quinilla.
Know Lorelei, you will also know that she took impeccable notes that everyone, all the other students were jealous of, and she had to copy them 50 times over for everyone.
I even used my own notes that she had written down before she So thank you so much for having me here today. It's really a pleasure and an honor to be with you and to talk about this topic that I'm quite passionate about, but I have to admit also searching also myself on how to make sense of this and what to think about it in many different ways. It's a rather new topic of investigation for theology. I was just explaining to some people that my own interest in it really started in the late 90s when I was in Belgium. We had a conference bringing together different centers of interreligious dialogue and people who led those centers in Europe to reflect on this topic, because it seemed to be a growing phenomenon. People who said they were Christian and Hindu, Christian and Buddhist, Jews and Buddhist, you know, the famous Jubu expression. So there seems to be a growing sense among people that they don't, their religious identity isn't limited to one particular religion, but extends beyond it and includes aspects from other religious traditions. And what kind of sense can we make of that? What does this mean? How can we reflect on that from a religious perspective, from an objective perspective, if you will, from a subjective perspective? So in the late 90s, when we had this conference, people were talking about it more in testimonial terms, and I realized there had been little or no theological reflection on the topic. So I called on some scholars I knew who were interested in the topic and put together this volume that Lorelei mentioned, Many Mansions, Multiple Religious Belonging and Christian Identity. And so it's a collection of theologians who think about what this means for furthering Christian theology. Now, what I want to do today is sort of first sort of reflect on what is this phenomenon of multiple religious belonging, because it's a term that we have started to use, and it's being used in all kinds of different ways to refer to all kinds of different realities. And I just want to first sort of lay out what it could possibly mean and how it manifests itself in different ways, maybe in different continents and in different ways on this continent. And then I want to also reflect on it maybe from a more traditional religious perspective. So, you know, we can look at it from a subjective perspective, which is what usually happens. So I think I belong to more than one religious tradition, so I belong to different religions as an individual. That's one reality, but religious belonging is not just who I think I belong to, but also being recognized by the other as belonging to it. I mean, I could say I'm a Hindu, but if no other Hindu recognizes me as a Hindu, what does this mean? You know? So if I say I'm Christian and Buddhist, but no other Buddhist recognizes me as a Buddhist, it's a rather limited identity. So religious identity is always in the interplay between subjective identification and, you can say, objective recognition of who you are as a religious individual. And what does that mean? How does that play into each other? I mean, the other way around is true also. If somebody says you are a Buddhist, but I don't think I am a Buddhist, then it's also meaningless, right? So religious identity is always somehow on that tension between subjective identification and objective sense of belonging, and how can we think about that? So those are the things I want to talk about today. And first I will start from a subjective perspective. What does this mean, sort of people who say they belong to different religious traditions, how does that manifest itself concretely? So Just to make it clear, multiple religious belonging is a sense of belonging to more than one religious tradition at a time, at the same time, right? So it's not converting from one religion to the other or successively belonging to different religions. It's at the same time a sense of belonging to more than one religious tradition. So this is a relatively new phenomenon in the West, where, you know, traditionally it was cuius regio, ilius religio, whoever's territory, the religion of the territory will be the religion of the people. So religions in the West traditionally have been very much separated geographically until, I suppose, the past century, where people from different religions immigrated and religions expanded into different lands and so on. And now we have in the West the reality of religious pluralism, where, you know, in any particular village or town, or certainly cities, you have Hindus, Buddhists, Sikhs, Jains, any new religion all living together. This phenomenon of religious plurality or religious diversity is actually relatively new in the West. In the East, on the other hand, religions have coexisted in the same territories for a very long time. And what we see in the East is that that has resulted in a kind of religious specialization, where different religions have taken on different areas of life. So, for example, in China, since time immemorial, people were Taoist and Confucian and Buddhist at the same time. So they are Taoist in their relation maybe to nature or to their own interiority. They're Confucian in their relation to others, in their social interactions. And then they're Buddhist when they die. So Buddhism in the Far East has become very much the religion that has taken care of funeral rituals. In Japan, for example, that's the specialization of Buddhist priests, is to perform funeral rituals. And people go to Shinto shrines at New Year's, or when their children are coming of age, or when they do rites of passage. And they go to a Catholic church when they want to get married, because they love the aesthetics of a Christian marriage wedding ceremony. So this idea of multiple religious belonging in the East is quite common and has been in place for a very long time. So people take aspects of different religions that fit their needs, for their aesthetic needs and their existential needs, if you will, at particular times. So if people want to be healed, they will go to a new Japanese religion, because that's what they are specialized in. So religions are sort of there in the marketplace to be used for different purposes, and people don't worry about whether it all makes sense or whether their teachings all fit together. They view religion mostly from the perspective does it work? You know, its efficacy. that has been the case for a very long time in Asia. Religion is not so much about truth and coherence and theological insight and so on, but just plain, you know, effectiveness. Does it work? And if it works, then it must be true. You know, so that's really how in Asia religion has been more conceived. And so religions that allow themselves to fit into that framework have survived, and religions who insisted on having this all-encompassing, exclusive worldview have really had to suffer. So that has been the reality of religious plurality in the East, and people belong to different religions at the same time. Of course, as you might expect, Christianity has suffered in the East, or has never really taken off, because it doesn't really fit very well in that framework. Same with Islam, really. You know, these are two religions that are very universalistic, absolute in their claims. And so for these religions to fit in that framework has been very problematic or difficult. And so they haven't really had, you know, the appeal that some of the other religions have had. You know, we can come back to that later. Now, coming to the West, as I said, the phenomenon is different insofar as it's really only in the past 100 years that, you know, people have had access to Buddhism, Hinduism, Islam is really also a relatively recent phenomenon in the West, and so forth. So the reality of religious pluralism or plurality is very new in the West. I mean, Buddhism has now become such a familiar religion, but you know, Buddhist texts have only been translated in Western languages since late 19th, early 20th century. So, you know, Buddhism before the 19th century, if you look at the way Westerners spoke about Buddhism, it just was completely off. You know, they had absolutely no understanding of the tradition. You know, it's really quite recent that this religion has become part of our horizon. So how does so now we live in a reality or in a context of religious plurality. How does this reality of religious multiple religious belonging manifest itself? I've tried to sort of make a chart. I don't know if it really works yet, but let's see of how what kinds of types of multiple religious belonging there are. So the first type of multiple belonging is one in which one is born from parents of different religions, so mixed marriages. Children born in a context of religious diversity where the mother is Catholic and the father is Jewish, for example, have to negotiate two different religious identities. Now, usually, you know, parents decide or choose to raise the child into one particular religion, and the child maintains maybe some aspects of the other religion that are continued. But there's still a sense, I think, of divided loyalties in children born from mixed marriages, at least if the parents continue to practice their religion, where they are torn or are drawn in some ways towards both traditions, and in some ways have to negotiate the two different religious traditions. Mm-hmm. Now, this is not a voluntary form of multiple religious belonging. This is sort of an inherited multiple religious belonging, really, that has come through birth, but that still is one form of multiple religious belonging. A second form of multiple religious belonging is the type that I talked about, where maybe the Japanese and the Chinese example are also becoming more prevalent in the West, where one picks from different religions what one thinks works. So if one particular religion offers calming practices, one will go to that religion for that purpose. If another religion offers a beautiful funeral ceremony, that religion will be taken for that purpose. So a marketplace religiosity where one takes from different religions according to one's own needs. I suppose that's what we understand by New Age religiosity, right? It's a sort of religious supermarket where all religions have different things to offer, and one picks and chooses from different religions according to one's own inclinations and desires. We can come back to that. This is really a type of multiple religious belonging, I suppose, from a subjective perspective, where the individual thinks or believes that one belongs to Buddhism in so far as it offers calming and introspective techniques, and to maybe Christianity in so far as one identifies with the image of Jesus and the Christian tradition through inheritance, or picks and chooses from a guru here and a teacher there and makes one's own spirituality. That's sort of the kind of classical New Age type of multiple religious belonging. In this type, what characterizes this is that I have become the center of decision for what is true and valuable in different religions, right? So there are different characteristics of New Age that I tend to think are valid. You know, most New Agers are very holistic in their approach to religion. They are optimistic about life. They focus on personal spiritual growth and development. So there are a number of general characteristics, but I think that the distinctive characteristic of New Age is that the center of religious or spiritual authority is no longer a reality outside of oneself, but one's own inner
reality or inside oneself. So what is true and valuable in a particular religion will not be based on doctrinal teachings, but on what helps me to grow spiritually, to change what answers to my particular existential or spiritual needs at a particular time and place. So you can call that multiple religious belonging, but for many people who are New Agers, they would see that, or they might see or approach it from the other perspective as a non-belonging, because they, and a way to see it, it's sort of a believing without belonging. So they don't really in any way accept the categories of belonging as it's defined by any religious tradition. They believe in different aspects, but they don't belong to any. Because in many ways, they, New Agers reject the religious self-understanding of the religion. And so they will maybe take in some Christian mystical figures, but they will reject the Christian claims to absoluteness and to universality and exclusivity and so on. So in that sense, they really rejected the self-understanding of most religions while picking and choosing what fits their own religious or spiritual needs. So that's another type of multiple religious belonging, which is voluntary. And so the first type would be involuntary, where you are born in a situation where you don't really choose. This New Age multiple religious belonging is much more voluntary, but again, is it really believing without belonging? Can you really talk about religious belonging if the religious self-understanding is explicitly rejected by people who operate with religions this way? A third type of multiple religious belonging, I think, is one that we also, that is close to this but somewhat different, in that individuals belong very explicitly and predominantly to one particular religion, but they might go to another religion for very circumscribed needs and desires. So in India, for example, Hindus will go to a Christian church where they believe particular miracles happen for blessings or for fertility or whatever the specialty of that saint is. People will go to that particular church. In the Islamic world, Muslims go to Christian churches or venerate Christian saints. Christians venerate Muslim saints if they are believed to have particular powers or grant particular blessings. So it's not so much where, you know, you pick and choose from different religions, but a particular need manifests itself, and a religious person will look anywhere where that need is answered. So that's a different form of multiple religious belonging that's less sort of individualistic, if you will, of picking and choosing, but very much sort of answering to the immediate religious need and concern. So that's closer to the Asian model that I have discussed at the beginning. And then a third form, or fourth I suppose, is a more systematic, I would say, engagement in another religion from within one particular religion. And this is what you can call interreligious dialogue. So the fourth type is a type of multiple religious belonging of individuals who are very much rooted in one particular religion, but engage in a profound dialogue with another religion. And in the process of that dialogue, really go into the other religion in its depth, to the point where sometimes individuals who engage in that dialogue in depth sometimes lose their sense of primary belonging. So, I mean, most often interreligious dialogue is very much conducted from within one religion, engaging with another religion back and forth, in which my religion is sort of the norm for what I will integrate from the other religion, things that are compatible with my own religion or that might enrich my own religion, I may integrate within my own. But sometimes people engage in dialogue with such intensity and depth that they lose their sense of primary identification. Some of you may have written read the writings of Abhishekananda, Auri Rasool, mm-hmm. or B. Griffiths, Michael Amaladov, mostly Christian religious monks, Auri Rasool and B. Griffiths were both Benedictines, who went to India, immersed themselves fully in Indian spirituality, both in terms of their readings and their practice, and went so deep into it that they sometimes came to see Christianity from a Hindu perspective and then another time Hinduism from a Christian perspective. And if you look at their journals, particularly I think Auri Rasool is a very, very powerful example of this, where he admits to sometimes not really knowing where he stands, whether he sees Christianity through Hindu eyes or Hinduism through Christian eyes. And so the struggle with that in his life is really a very interesting account, and I think the most interesting, theologically speaking, to reflect upon. I think, you know, that pick and choose New Age spirituality is really believing without belonging. It's not really multiple belonging. Auri Rasool really, he was a Benedictine monk. He really belonged to the Catholic tradition in its fullest sense, but plunged into Hinduism also in its deepest grounds, became the disciple of a Hindu spiritual master, and really had an awakening experience with this master, and then struggled for the rest of his life with how to reconcile this Christian background with the Hindu experience, and going back and forth. And there, I think, in his journal, which is translated also in English if you're interested, there you see really the full rawness, the rawness of this struggle to belong to two religions at the same time, and how difficult that really is. And that's really what I think is interesting theologically. It's not sort of the superficial picking and choosing, but really the difficulty of in-depth belonging that is what I think poses really a challenge to theological thinking about this. And I want to look at that with you. So what you see in this type of interreligious dialogue is that often people use, or those few individuals who have really gone into the other religion in depth, then sometimes use Christianity as the norm and sometimes Buddhism or Hinduism as the norm. So going back and forth between the two, but always sort of in a state of tension, I think, and difficulty in how exactly to reconcile the two traditions. What often happens also with people, I think, in interreligious dialogue is that they have gone very deeply into the other tradition but maintain a kind of nostalgia for the tradition of origin. So multiple believers or belongers are, I think, really at heart sometimes Buddhists or Hindus, but just can't quite let go of their Jewish or their Christian symbolic universe. So one starts to reinterpret the world completely from the perspective of the other tradition, but maintain the kind of symbolic and maybe ritual framework of one. So, you know, multiple belongers might continue to go to Mass, but then reinterpret the figure of Jesus and the meaning of the Eucharist and the Christian prayer life in Hindu or in Buddhist terms. I think that's also a way in which multiple belonging manifests itself. It's sort of adopting the framework of one religion, but maintaining an attachment, if you will, to the symbolic framework of another religious tradition. And how does that play out? That's, I think, a form of dialogue or multiple religious belonging. That would be number five, right? So, here we have different ways, I think, in which multiple belonging manifests itself. And I certainly would be interested in hearing if you can think of other forms or other ways in which multiple belonging expresses itself. Okay, so these are some of the subjective expressions, I think, of multiple religious belonging, or the ways in which people experience themselves to belong to different religious traditions. Now, how do we look at this from the perspective of the religions themselves? So people can believe to belong to different religions, but is that something that makes sense from a religious perspective or from the perspective of the religions themselves? I already talked about some examples where religions have in fact themselves adapted to the reality of multiple belonging and sort of resigned in many ways to fulfilling only a limited function in society. So in Shintoism or Buddhism in Japan, Buddhism in China, Confucian, these religions have sort of resigned themselves to fulfilling a particular function in society and have thereby accepted the possibility of multiple religious belonging. But I think we have to also recognize that that is in most cases really a matter of resignation. That most religions, in terms of their understanding of religious belonging, expect a full and unconditional and undivided commitment from their members. That's of course certainly the case with universalistic religions such as Christianity, Islam, Buddhism, but it's also the case of course with Judaism. Even though it's an ethnic religion, if you are Jewish, you are expected to be fully Jewish and not half Christian, half Jewish, right? So there is in every religious tradition a kind of absolute understanding of reality and an absolute truth claim that in some ways precludes the possibility of belonging to another religion equally or at the same time. Yeah. So if you are, it just doesn't make sense logically from within a Christian framework to be Christian and Hindu, because there are innumerable conflicting claims between the two traditions. And you can say that there is a lot that they have in common and that can be reconciled, but there are in the end a number of conflicting claims between the two traditions that you have to come down on, whether you believe or you don't believe, or you accept or you don't accept particular claims, and that cannot just easily be reconciled. So that is of course the theological or the religious problem of multiple religious belonging, that religions are based on truth claims that are not seamlessly reconcilable. So there are claims that each religion makes that conflict with claims of other religious traditions. And religions themselves ideally aren't just sort of the providers of rituals for their believers, right? They also ideally offer worldview and a conception of reality, a conception of truth that they accept their believers to endorse and to submit to. Right? So religions aren't just ritual providers or consolers for people in particular with particular needs, but ideally there's a sense of complete acceptance of the worldview and the ritual practice of the particular religion. In that sense, I think the idea of complete and wholehearted and exclusive belonging to that religion is for all religious traditions, I would say, the ideal. I don't know of any religious tradition that voluntarily and happily concedes to the possibility of multiple religious belonging. Now, why is that? You can say that that's sort of a kind of jealousy of religions, or based on sort of the institutional possessiveness or jealousy of other religious traditions. You can see it from that perspective, but I think that there is also a real spiritual meaning to this that goes beyond this kind of institutional or doctrinal jealousy or exclusiveness. That for religions, the idea of belonging is the idea also of complete surrender of self, complete surrender of self to a particular reality or truth that is believed to be the ultimate truth. Now, This is, of course, a more mystical or spiritual approach to belonging, that it's only in that complete surrender of self that you can really reach the ultimate goal of a religion, whether that goal is nirvana or moksha or salvation in the Christian sense, can only come about through a complete self-abnegation and surrender to the truth of that particular religion. So that's another way of approaching that kind of exclusiveness of a religion that's less based on sort of doctrinal and dogmatic imposition, this is the only truth, but it's only through surrender, to complete surrender to a particular religion, that you can reach the ultimate goal. And, you know, like in Hinduism, Hindu gurus will say, you know, go and find out from every guru what they have to teach and go and search out what you believe to be the truth. But finally, you can only reach moksha if you focus on one particular teacher. Mm-hmm. If you follow the path of one particular master, that is the only way you can find the ultimate goal. Because as long as you are divided somehow in your loyalty to many masters, and that's the title of my talk, Many Masters, you can't give yourself fully to one or the other, right? It's like in marriage, as long as you are divided, you know, in your love between your spouse and someone else, you cannot give yourself fully to your spouse. So, and it's in this fullness of giving that the joy of that surrender also manifests itself, I think. So, I try to sort of understand the logic, the religious logic of exclusive belonging beyond sort of the sort of exclusive claim of each religion, that it's really in the fullness of giving that one reached the ultimate goal, or in the kind of complete self-emptying, self-givenness, complete self-humiliation or humility that one can reach the ultimate goal. And that can only, I think, be done within the confines of one religious tradition. So that's a different way of understanding it. So that's a sort of spiritual understanding of exclusive belonging, which also manifests itself in the fact that even those religions that have adopted a more limited role in particular societies, like Taoism in China or Buddhism in Japan, they still require exclusive belonging from their elite, if you will, to use an ugly word, but from their spiritual elite or their spiritual man. So a Buddhist monk in Japan will not be also going to Shinto shrines, or a Taoist monk in China will be living in the Taoist monastery and practicing this Taoist tradition fully. So even in places and contexts where religions have conceded to a limited role, the ultimate ideal is a full belonging and, to one particular religious tradition. So there's, I think, in the religious demand for exclusive belonging, more than just a purely institutional possessiveness, there is also a spiritual logic that applies to all religious traditions. So what I'm saying is not just from a sort of Catholic or Christian doctrinal position, but it really applies to all religious traditions, and I think is really a matter of the logic, the internal logic of the particular of religion itself. Once when I talked about this, somebody made the comment that it takes a lifetime to follow one master. And I think that just summarizes the whole point I'm trying to make, that to reach the end of religious life requires a sort of complete devotion or commitment to a particular path or a particular way. So that's, you know, on the one hand you have the subjective experience of multiple belonging, then the objective ideal of exclusive belonging, if you will. Now, where do we stand in between the two? What sense then do we make of the experience of multiple religious belonging? I think with many people who practice multiple religious belonging, many of these people really are pioneers in the dialogue between religions, and you know, who practice it in depth, like Abhishekananda or B. Griffiths, or people who really try to go into the other religious traditions, and maybe people in New Age. I mean, I certainly don't want to wash it away as just purely superficial. I think many people who practice New Age are genuinely seeking and finding also in the different religions what they don't find in any one particular religious tradition. So we have to, religions themselves, I think, in their claim to full belonging, have to recognize that there is a spiritual search in people that is not fulfilled in their particular tradition. And more in the encounter between religions, religions have to come to recognize that other religions offer sometimes things that their particular religion doesn't offer, and that may genuinely complement what they have to teach, and that they may genuinely learn from. So I think in that sense, multiple people who practice multiple religious belonging are really prophetic sometimes in what they exemplify in their own search in the other religious tradition for meaning and truth that may not be completely fulfilled in their particular religion. So people like Mike Lamalados or Abhishektananda, Aloysius Pieris, many of these individuals have sort of pointed to aspects where religions can learn from each other. And so multiple religious belonging is sort of a school of dialogue, you can say also, a school of dialogue where individuals belonging to one tradition plunge completely into the other and see where the other really has something that one's own religion might learn from and might grow through, elements that might complement one's own religious tradition. So when I'm sort of weary of this multiple religious belonging, I certainly don't reject it wholesale. I think religions may understand themselves as self-contained, comprehensive paths to the truth, but I think they have a whole lot to learn from each other. And so people who learn in their own life by becoming as fully as they can members of other religions can point to elements where religions can learn from the other, and places where they can complement each other. I think also the very fact that there are so many Christians who are Buddhists and so many Christians who say they are Hindus points to a real spiritual need that seems not to be fulfilled in many Christian churches. And so what does that tell the Christian church, or maybe also what does it tell the Hindu tradition or the Buddhist tradition about these people who search without fully belonging to them? So these multiple belongers, I think, are really an important lesson for any particular religion. What is it that they are lacking in our tradition that they have to search in other religious traditions? And in that sense, I think they have a great deal to offer, and religions have a great deal to learn from them. Theologically, the way multiple belonging is usually made possible is people who belong to more than one religious tradition claim that no religion has the fullness of the truth, that the truth is always beyond any particular religious tradition, so that religions are all partial, finite, historically particular expressions of a truth that is beyond all understanding. And so that is the sort of theological framework in which multiple belongers operate usually. So they take elements from different religions that they believe ultimately all refer to the same truth that is beyond all religious traditions. So that's the theological framework in which multiple belongers make sense of their experience of multiple belonging usually, that can be discussed whether that is a legitimate theological framework, but for them that makes sense. Again, from a religious point of view, that doesn't fully correspond to the way religions understand themselves. It's not, religions don't see themselves as merely pointing to something that is beyond all religious traditions, but if you have a sort of pyramid of religion, every religion will see itself at least as closest to that ultimate truth that is beyond every religion. And therefore, every expression of that ultimate truth is also part of the path. It's not just merely a historical contingent reality, but it's a way to lead to that ultimate reality. It's a necessary means to lead to that ultimate goal that religions set forth. So again, you can see the subjective experience of how to make sense of it that sort of doesn't completely fly with the religious understanding of how religions understand themselves in relation to that absolute reality. So in conclusion, I think, you know, on the tension between that subjective experience and the objective self-understanding of religions can be seen as a fruitful one. It doesn't just have to be seen as one that has to lead to a complete dismissal of multiple religious belonging. It can be seen as a fruitful one, again, in showing religions where their lack is maybe, or what people are searching for that they aren't really fully answering to. That's one way. And I think the individuals who claim to belong to multiple religions have to also sometimes understand the perspective of the religion in itself also. That's claiming full belonging, not just out of possessiveness or jealousness, but because there is something of a deep spiritual logic to the idea of exclusive belonging to a particular religion. So those are the points I wanted to make this morning, and I'm looking forward to our discussion.